Right, okay, some of your comments coming in just as we wait to welcome Brendan Devaney onto the show. God made the animals to feed the people who are on the earth. I do understand what you're saying, and as I say, just to have the full wide range of conversation, a lot of the animals that are alive for us to eat, we rare them. Do you know, they're not random. Like, it's not like we go into the forests and kill pigs for bacon and try and catch a cow for beef. They're reared for that function. Their only function, a lot of them. Fair play to that lady and animal rights groups. You have my full support, such brave people. And other animals are treated badly, but most of these race horses are treated like gold and there is no ill treatment. Does she consider catching and eating fish cruel? I would suggest yes. I applaud that girl for what she stands for, and I personally never watch or bet on any sport that involves animals. If I was off air, I'd have a joke there, but I wouldn't risk it whilst I'm on air. That girl is a typical city girl. It's city people telling country people how to live. Do away with farmers, but don't touch our cars or oil and gas. Yeah, indeed. I think if you're in, and to drive in a car to a protest to save animals and the environment seems a bit ironic to me. Just to say, I agree with Greg. I don't watch the Grand National. It's so cruel to the horses, from a daily listener. Great to have you on board. Great to have all of you on board. Right, okay. It was an interesting weekend of sport, and we're going to focus on the GAA side of things now with the one and only Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate. Good morning, Brent.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Right, where should we start? I suppose we have to start with, and we should start with, Donegal doing Fermanagh in the Nicky Rackard Cup. Put that win into some context for us, Brendan.
Yeah, it's I suppose it's a competition Donegal have eyes on the prize, have won it. Fermanagh, of course, faced relegation themselves. Donegal were in a league final. We were at home, so a lot of people was thinking it would be a Donegal game that we would control, but Fermanagh really came. They were unlucky in the league. They lost a few games by a point, Greg, so it was probably a bit of a false impression of them because they had a couple of cracking hurlers in their ranks, Greg. And it's just funny, from watching GAA this last wee while, I'm watching Gaelic football, obviously, and watching soccer. The game was just absolutely brilliant. It was breathtaking, Greg, end to end. I said in the first update, if you're anywhere near Donald Park, come on and watch this. I mean, Fermanagh really put it up to Donegal. Some of the scores were absolutely phenomenal, Greg. And from a time where normally you have so much time to assess points and write down, you literally look down, mark the point. It was a score at the other end of the pitch. You know, it was that kind of game. Now, Fermanagh did lose a man towards the end of the first half, which might have had a bit of a bearing on it, Greg. But that said, Donegal really stuck to it. And Liam McKinney's goal in the second half was probably a big turning point because Fermanagh had a four-point advantage at half-time. And the second half started off a bit tetchy and it looked like it was going to be difficult to end that lead. But McKinney's goal was kind of the launch pad for Donegal to go on and control the game. And towards the end then, whether it was the spare man, or well, it was just Donegal's bit of class coming through, and particularly Declan Coulter, of course, a legend of Donegal hurling. And he hit the last four or five points there and just has experience in to see Donegal across the line, Greg. But in terms of a game of sports, you know, because we see so many games now getting entrenched in tactics and possession. Of course, hurling isn't like that and really can't be like that. So it's just to see two teams going at it, 121 to 18 points or that come through. So we've got a couple of away games now against Roscommon and Armagh. So it was important to get off to a victory in that Nicky Rackard. So you have them, Louth and Wicklow then at home after that. So what happens then, it's just that one group that's playing for this competition. The top two teams go straight into the Nicky Rackard final. So that's where Donegal are aiming for, Greg.
On a personal level, have you always had the sort of level of interest and admiration in hurling, or is your own footballing career and soccer career and everything else you're involved in now you have a bit more time? Like, has it always been, or what I'm trying to say is, are you maybe starting to appreciate it a little bit more as you can watch it in a different way now?
Well, would you believe this, Greg? My first five times in Croke Park was all hurling. Right. My mum's from Galway, you see. She actually was a school with the legend that is Brendan Linsky. So all our family grew up with this massive bit of hurling side, this, because at the time when Donegal didn't get to Croke Park too often, Galway were often there and used to be pushed over the turnstiles. It's hard to believe, Greg, that even someone of my young age has them type of memories. I even hopped out on the Croke Park pitch and held the Liam McCarthy when that nobody in the family could find me. I was away after getting a grand list trophy. Not that even knew getting that much about the whole history of it. Not at that stage, Greg. I was only a wee lad. But no, my sisters would all play camogie, you see.
I get you.
So we had been pucking about in the garden, and I was lucky enough to play for Burt when I was a kid.
Took
me down to play a bit of hurling with the Burt boys, and also have a wee small understanding, Greg.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. It's just, you know, sometimes when there's so much going on in life, you don't have the space, maybe. But of course, with your history, that's clear. No, that comes across, Brent. In football yesterday, again, I don't know enough, but I believe I watched it, and I believe that the Tyrone versus Monaghan game was a brilliant game of football. Really, really exciting right down to the end. I'm not sure what the purist in yourself thought of it, but for a couch fan, to me, it was a cracking game of football. And two games next weekend have a lot to live up to.
Yeah. Look, that's great. As you said there, I was thinking this was going to be terribly cagey, and we weren't going to get the spectacle we did. I mean, 118 to 217, I would never have envisaged that scoreline. And a lot of that, I think, came down to how Tyrone played the game. Very, very strange performance from them. Now, I missed the start of it coming up from the hurling. Mm. I was getting a wee bit after matching that. But when I came up, Tyrone were in complete control of the game. And then the second half, we just had this brilliance from Monaghan, this revival. And between the experience they have and the young fresh blood that they've in, they just took the game to Tyrone. And I couldn't believe Tyrone's defence. When they couldn't withstand any Monaghan attack. You know, at the other end of the pitch, and Monaghan were very well drilled. We look at Derry and the way they're drilled, and that's where we kind of want Donegal to get back to again in terms of being a defence that has some ability to shut it out. Now, Monaghan's, when Tyrone got inside their 40, 30-yard line, 20-yard line, there was Monaghan people snapping. They were twos and threes. At the other end of the pitch, every Monaghan attack, literally the whole of that last 20 minutes, if Monaghan had just kept the ball and ran at Tyrone, it was either a foul or a score. And they got their just rewards. And, of course, you know, O'Toole going in, like, as I say, everybody's thinking fisted over the bar. I mean, to win the game in the manner he did, what a moment for the
goalkeeper's not going to want to watch that one back too often, I don't think.
No, but again, where was Monaghan's defence? Greg, you know, you're a point up. You know, it's time to sit in and at least make it difficult to shoot from an awkward.
See, I was like, I would say I was a lot of people waiting for that to be saved to scream out, just fisted over the bar. But he made the right decision in the end. But then,
what a moment for him, Greg. Sometimes you got to go for it, and he certainly did.
And you have to go for it. So how do we follow that against Down? I mean, it's going to be... What kind of a game do you expect against Down?
You know what, Greg, it's nearly impossible to tell at this point. I mean, we the only thing you have to go on is your league performances, which were, particularly the last two, Greg, were really poor. And, you know, we basically have, you know, I was talking to people over the weekend there, for players that are missing and injured, you nearly have another team out there that could be in the mix for Donegal, but they're not. So listen, we still have a good bit of experience. We have plenty of Ulster Championship winners in the ranks and that. It's just, Greg, going from particularly that Roscommon game, the way we were defensively and in attack, everything was not happening. There was no fluidity. There was no defensive shape. Man for man, we were in trouble. As a team, we were in trouble. But listen, there's time now. The lads were away at a training camp and that. They pulled things together. Down our Division 3 team, they were close to coming up now, but they didn't make it. So we got to say it's a game that we have to go on and win. But more than the victory, we got to go, I suppose, and have some shape their team. Now, we have a load of young lads, and they're, I mean, that team that finished against Roscommon, there was five lads, basically. There was a few had made their debuts, and there was five or six lads in there that are basically, this is their first season in there. So I suppose as a county, Greg, as much as you don't want to be overcritical, I'm thinking these lads are putting in a huge effort. They're playing for our county. You know, we got to get behind them now.
Yeah.
And we'll be up and down, and as many Donegal fans as we can, because when times is hard, you know, Greg, that's sometimes when we got to get behind
100%.
Our lads.
And you know, what your view is and what, other people's views is all that, but I thought it was a really interesting interview. Was it after the Roscommon game that you an interview you had with Patrick McBurty? And I can't remember the exact line of question or his exact response, but my takeaway from it was, and I must listen back, that, you know, they'll be ready. You know that they are ready, that they can up their game, that they can perform better. So it'll be interesting to see how that, obviously he'll be relaying that attitude in the dressing room and what have you. It'll be interesting to see how that relates to on the pitch against Dan next week. Do you know how you get little things that make you more interested in the game? I'm really interested off the back of that interview to see how this team performs against Dan in the Championship.
Yeah. See, it was hard asking him them questions because I knew how low we were. We just got relegated and it was a terrible performance. And it, as I said to you, Eric, it's, you can come in and be critical and highlight this and that, but then the Donegal side, me and the fan that I am now, I'm watching these boys and knowing what they're putting in. And as I say, as well as all these new boys, and they're going into championships the first time. There's been all this stuff in the background. After I asked them questions, and Patrick would be quite bullish, that's his nature, and their respect.
No, it took you on, no doubt about that.
So I respect that. Like I say, I had knots in my stomach leaving that because I hated asking them, but gosh, he wasn't there.
But do you know what the reason why those interviews are good, and maybe because I do interviews, I get it. You had to ask those questions to get that response. And I'm quoting his response. If you hadn't asked those questions, we wouldn't have that interview to talk about. So I get where you're coming from, but I think it was really valuable because it's given me a new sort of insight and interest as we head into next week. Now, if all that wasn't good enough, the Life Stories, which is a new feature that Brendan introduced into the podcast, has an amazing guest this week in Colin McFadden. I mean, you're going to chat to him this evening, but where do you start? What I like to ask you sometimes, like, what are you looking forward to getting into with him in the conversation?
Do you know what? Excuse me. On top of everything else, he's a top lad. I obviously played with him for years. I have great time for him. So, you know what? I'm going to let it roll. I know his career inside out because I've either played with him or watched him. And I just want to get a talk to him about his experiences and those moments, not just the big moments, the obvious ones, you know, the Ulsters, all Ireland ones, but he had a foot, I suppose, in an initial camp when Donegal hadn't got the professionalism that Jim brought in. And then when Jim did bring in, I think of all the players in there, he excelled the most. You know, his abilities, what we all knew was in him, and his class and his free ticket. I mean, in 2012, Greg, I would say he was close to having a flawless season. For a forward, that's literally impossible. But I'm trying to think back to even the free that he missed. I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable where he went there. And for me, you know, a lot of people said, listen, I thought he was our main man in 2012 across the board and in the whole country. And I just want to ask him, I suppose, about his side of that. Of course, his club side as well and its effect in the area. And I spoke to a couple of his teammates in that over the weekend. And listen, it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal chat to him. He's obviously vice principal over at St. Eunan's now. He's been involved there under 20s. So he's very invested in GA all the time. And maybe a manager for the future, Greg, you never know.
Yeah, why not? Okay, so Colin McFadden, as part of the Life Stories feature of the DL Debate, and all the reaction and previews that you could want right across the codes of GEA, just after 7 p.m. this evening, just after the news. And if you can't make it for that, don't forget it's podcasted for you on highlandradio.com, and you can listen to the DL Debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Brendan, anything else you want to mention before we go? That's it?
No, that's it, Greg. My wee boy's chicken box. I don't know, can you catch him on the mic?
No,
Daddy is coming out, so we just timed that nicely, Greg. Well done, mate. You're a man for timing, I'll tell you.
Right,
I'm coming.
Okay. I mean, it's not easy, is it? It's we wish him a speedy recovery. All right, take care, Brent. Thanks very much indeed. 086 60 25. I think they're looking for a car. Has he still got a Highland car, is he? Right, okay. He's got, after he mentioned his son's got chicken pox, I'm not gonna bring up the car, Roisin Kelly standing at the window. Right, tell Brendan you were great. You, Michael Murphy, Paddy McBurty, and the two McGees and Ryan McHugh. It's just a pity that yous are retired. Yous were great players coming in from Mal. Yes, indeed. He is a good person, Brendan. And I'll direct you again to a podcast that's on BBC Sounds, the BBC Sounds app, featuring Brendan Devaney. Brendan Devaney, I beg your pardon. Right, okay. We welcome into studio Kasia Kozia, who's Youth Information Officer with the Donegal Youth Service. Good to have you in studio. Kasia, how are you keeping?
Thank you very much. All grand. Thank you very much for the invitation and chance to be here in Highland Radio again.
Yeah, of course, because today, isn't it, the 17th of April, is European Youth Information Day and the birthday of the European Youth Information and Counselling agencies. So talk to me about today. Why is today important in your view?
Of course. So yeah, the name of the agency is super long and I never remember it. But anyway, we can call it ERICA, just in short.
Okay. I was trying to avoid it because I didn't know how they would pronounce that. But anyway.
No, that is ERICA. Why is it important? First of all, for me as a youth information officer, this is a very important day because that's the chance for our center to celebrate the reliable, free and non-judgmental and biased information that we provide to young people in Donegal, and not only, but mainly in Donegal, yes? There's another special occasion that we are celebrating this day very widely and loudly, our Letterkenny Centre, Letterkenny Youth Information Centre, was awarded with the quality label from ERICA.
Congratulations. So
thank you very much. This is the big day for us because it took us a good few weeks to prepare the whole application form to justify and to prove that we are good enough to get the quality label. And at the same time, the quality label gives some kind of reassurance to young people that the information that they receive from us are at the very good level.
What kind of information do people seek from you?
So mainly young people, anyone, basically anyone who is aged 13 up to 30 years old can come to Letterkenny Youth Information Centre and get information on whatever the question is. And it's literally whatever the question is. Mainly we're working with people on accommodation, finding the accommodation, maybe helping out with references, CVs, employment, mock interviews. Also the angle of European work is focused on mobilities available to young people. So we're talking about, you know, studying abroad, volunteering abroad. Like one of the projects is European Solidarity Corps. People can go there for free, but that's the other stuff.
Are there plenty of opportunities like that, Kasia? You know, if someone's listening and they're really keen and eager and they tick the boxes, are there always sort of opportunities that you would hope to be able to match them with?
Yes, absolutely. The best idea, if you have that spark in your head and you really want to do something, but you don't know where to start, where to go, how to do it, visit Youth Information Centre, that's 16 to 18 Port Road, Letterkenny, the old cinema building, Donegal Youth Service. And find me on one or one of my colleagues, and we're more than happy to help you finding your path for the future. Maybe taking the gap year is not the worst thing that you can do. It doesn't mean that you will lose anything. You can gain much more. Also, it's all about motivation that you have. It's all about the skills that you have and that you want to improve. And at the end of the day, it's a great journey that you can go for and, you know, just experience different cultures, different languages.
I mean, even when we were over in Europe not so long ago, just by coincidence, there was a group of students over from Carn Donagh who already obviously had, the ones that we were speaking to, already an interest in, you know, European affairs and politics. But you could see how that was just really underlined and then speaking to people over there who are from Ireland or from everywhere, you know, it's people from everywhere. But it was just for people who want that life. I'm going off track a bit here, but where you interact with loads of different people with loads of different backgrounds, or you want to be close to where the seat of power is. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think travel can sort of, you know, can really. I think can change someone really quite significantly.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And we're talking about the whole, you know, I'm not saying that it will change your values, but maybe the horizons will become wider. You know what I mean? And also,
Go ahead. I'm not trying to interrupt you.
No, not at all. Also, you know, the European Youth Information Day is a great day to celebrate the media and information literacy skills, yes? So that's what we're working on and with in Letterkenny Youth Information Centre as well. We're providing many sessions on cyberbullying and internet safety. So that really, this day, today, the celebration really matches all the things that we do in Donegal Youth Service and in YIC.
I mean, you work with a lot of young people, but I think there's always people, maybe their parents or guardians or granny and grandlads listening, that aren't aware of the services. I know you try very hard to get them out there, but It is a really good support for young people across Donegal. Obviously, if you're in Letterkenny, it's more convenient, but it's there for you if you're 13 to 30. Maybe you just want a different perspective on things.
Absolutely.
You know, we can be in a wee bubble in our houses, and even those that love us as much as they do, you know, you could be hearing the same voices all the time. It's nice to maybe get some impartial or independent advice or guidance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moreover, even if people can't really make the whole journey up to Letterkenny, they can still use the online service that is the National Service of Information chat. When you go to spoonout.id, you will find the whole way how to get there. The chat is open on Monday to Friday, 4 to 8 p.m. So it's also another like angle of the youth information provision that youth information officers from across the country provide to young people. So again, we're talking about the same standards. We're talking about the high quality of information. And please remember that whatever you ask us to help you with, it's for free. It's as unbiased as possible. We're not judging anyone. We're not commenting on your choices. We're there to help you make your own decision.
Yeah, to facilitate your decision-making process. Okay.
Yes.
And again, congratulations again on getting that quality label, because it is, it's significant, isn't it? And a lot of work has to go into achieving. They're not divvied out, because if they were, they lose their importance and the significance of them.
Yes. Mm. And the thing is that the quality label is awarded for 3 years only. So after 3 years, we'll have to show the evidence of the improvement of the center and the hard work that we as a team put into that center. That's like part of our hearts go to the center, just to make sure that we still meet the standards and that we're good enough, you know.
Yeah, there's a bit of a celebration this afternoon, is there?
It is. It
right,
is.
What's going on?
So basically, today from 2 p.m. In Donegal Youth Service Headquarters, which is also known as LOFT, yes, to young people especially, we'll be holding a little bit of afternoon tea, whatever we call it, yes, just to be there to people who would like to know more about the quality label, about the work that we do, and if you want to chat a little bit about the opportunities waiting for you, I'm more than happy to do it, especially today because we're celebrating this big day.
Yeah, of course. It must be lovely to be involved with something that has a positive impact on young people's lives.
Absolutely, yes. And seeing them growing and after a few years, they come back to me and they're saying, oh my God, Kasia, thank you very much for pushing me or helping me doing something, because without this center, without these people, I wouldn't be able to develop myself, you know, professionally, personally, whatever it is, yes.
And Kasia, are you always this wonderfully energetic, or is it just when you come to visit us here at Highland Radio?
No, actually, the funny thing is that, like, you know, my personality, I hard to believe I'm introvert.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I know, surprised.
No, that's fine.
But I'm also, like, leaving my comfort zone whenever I'm working with young people, because on the other hand, I love working with people. It's just that the introvertism.
But that also gives you an opportunity. Sorry, that also gives you more of an understanding, because the real world,
absolutely,
in the real world, we do have to go outside our comfort zone,
absolutely,
because we can't be protected all of our lives.
No.
And I think young people now are more protected than they ever were.
Absolutely.
So in a way, I think you can relate to people where they, you know, maybe you have to go outside your comfort zone to pursue your opportunities sometimes.
But that's how it works.
Yeah.
Every time, if you want to achieve something or maybe gain a new knowledge or just to test yourself, you have to leave your bubble. Mm. You have to leave the place that you're happy. I'm not saying that you have to be unhappy when you leave it, but just a little bit of challenge for yourself to see what more I can do. You know?
Yeah, I think we always work better when we're challenged a little
bit,
don't we? Anything else you want to talk about to do with Donegal Youth Service or European Youth Information Day?
So basically, once again, I would like to invite everyone or anyone who would like to join us today at 2 p.m. But it's not only today. You can guys visit us every day from Monday to Friday. The center itself, like the Youth Information Center, is open from 12 to 6. Don't forget about the IGChat that is available Monday to Friday, 4 to 8. And you can always find us on our social media at YIG Letterkenny.
When you engage with young people, particularly within the European context, do you think the next generation and the generation behind them are going to feel or be more European, if you know what I mean? Because it is a relatively, it's a relatively new concept. You know, we think about it as if it's always been the case forever, and we can see how it changes with our neighbours across the water. But when you talk to young people, are you educating them about the role Europe has in our lives, or do they already get that, I wonder?
So you see, that's let's start with like basics. Some young people don't even see difference between Europe and European Union.
Yeah.
Okay. So Europe as a continent, yes, and European Union as a community or whatever we call it, as a union of countries. So it's all about educating them. It's all about showing the level of participation that they can achieve and what they can get out of it. So how much from myself I can give to the community, let's start with community and then maybe the whole union, and what I will get in return. Yes, it's not like, oh, just the benefits that I want, but just the awareness of who I am, where I am, and what I can do. We're talking about the ecological stuff. We're talking about the social challenges, yes, the refugee crisis. All of these things are part of the European participation.
In a way, though, it's funny the way things are going in that for many different reasons, it's not necessarily an anti-European sentiment, but a lot of countries are moving to a more nationalist approach. You know, there is growing attitudes, I think, in many countries, France, here, other, Germany, not pretty much all of them. It's global. You see it in America, you see it in everywhere. You see it in China pulling up the drawbridges, effectively. Yes. Russia, you know, we are. It just seems everywhere that the world is not being seen as a community. It's being seen almost as a, by some, not all, of course. I don't want to overrepresent it either. But do you get where I'm coming from? We seem to almost be moving away from how we can benefit each other rather than, no, this is all ours, it's for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean, because even the country that I come from, Poland, has changed so much since I left, which was in 2008. That honestly, in terms of mentality and the way the society works and communities work, I just don't recognize this place
anymore.
Tell me
why. What's changed in Poland?
You know, I don't really want to go into the political.
No, you don't have to. But just, I suppose, the everyday stuff, not necessarily which party is successful or not, but are you saying they're becoming more nationalist, more isolated?
Yes, that's the thing. Yeah. That's exactly the thing that you mentioned, Greg. It's just more about, and I don't know where it's coming from. That's a good question.
But then at the same time, the Polish doors were flung open for people fleeing the war in Ukraine, millions upon millions of people. Now, I presume within Poland, there are those saying we can't accommodate all of these people, and then there are others saying we must do what we can for our neighbours or we could be next.
Mm-hmm.
And every country, there is this almost split, this division.
Yes.
Now, I think sometimes it's overamplified. I've seen a recent study in terms of where people are left, middle or right. Right is relatively small. Mm-hmm. I think it's 60-odd percent of people are centric, right?
Yeah.
But we don't hear from them. We hear mostly from extreme lefts and extreme
rights. Because, you know, when they're centric, they're like, maybe yes, maybe no. Neutral. It's the worst thing in the world to be neutral, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in terms of like, how can we tie this up to the young people and European movements?
See, I'm very interested to see if the young people coming through revert back to perhaps where we were, or if they're sort of influenced and you know find themselves being more nationalist than European. I don't know, we don't know really where it's going to go, and it's kind of interesting. I
honestly
think
it's hard to predict it, because like, we still as a service, we still have a lot of work around the peace, you know, between Northern Ireland and Ireland. We do a lot of projects around this. We do a lot of empowerment and participation in the European structures projects, so I don't really know whether maybe young people pretend very well that they're interested, or maybe there's something happening in their heads already in terms of the nationalism. I haven't noticed any signs of this, you know, going to the right path in Donegal.
Yeah.
No, not really. Not among young people. In our center, we have Syrian young people, young people from Ukraine sometimes, a lot of Polish people, Irish, some of the Germans, you know, and they all coexist in the relatively okay, you know, it's maybe it's just the cultural changes differences, sorry, cultural differences, but nothing like, you know, I don't like you because you're from Poland.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll ever kind of really
no antagonism
get there.
Like.
It's strange. We're on a journey. I don't know where it's going.
Exactly.
I think we are all dependent on each other. I think we've got an awful lot to benefit from each mm-hmm. other. I think people would like to go and travel and visit in other people's countries and feel welcome and all, you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
But it could just be a phase that we're going through. It's just interesting that it's global, which I find really quite remarkable that, you know, we're supposedly all independent free thinkers. Right across the world, the same thing's happening in every country, in different language, with different religions, with different races and everything. Anyway, but that doesn't affect the work of the Donegal Youth Service. You're still
absolutely
there to help people. We're still receiving European young people in an exchange, aren't we? They're still coming to visit. We've had them up here before.
Yes.
That's back happening again, isn't
well,
it?
Well, unfortunately, not yet.
Oh.
And the main reason, I would say, it's just like, you know, we have to plan the budget. We have to check the funds that we can
get.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And unfortunately, with the current situation with accommodation in Ireland.
That's a really good point. I never
yes,
thought of that,
and yeah. the whole, you know, market. We're not really sure whether we are able to provide the accommodation,
yeah,
unfortunately, and it's very mm-hmm. sad. But instead, we focused on the youth exchanges under Erasmus Plus program
yes.
And funding. So it's cooperation with the third level educational
system.
Yeah. Yes, across the Europe. And we receive students, for example, for like 2 months or maybe
roughly, yeah.
6 weeks. They stay with us, they have the work placement or internship, and you know, it's easier to manage this than having like a group of 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
For now, we will see what happens next,
yeah.
but as per now, it's quite difficult to secure and to provide the accommodation to the young people.
Yeah, exactly. As I say, that's another probably
that's
phase
another,
that we're
yes,
going through that we
yes.
shall come through the other side. We always do. Right, okay. So again, congratulations on the quality label, recognising the Donegal Youth Service and your Youth Information Centre. It's a very proud day, one to celebrate, of course, and you shall be doing so at 2 p.m. where people can drop in for light refreshments, but also meet the staff. So if
absolutely.
Someone's listening to this with a young person, call in, drop them in, and it's very welcoming. These are designed to make people feel welcome and informed
absolutely,
from the moment
yes.
they step over the threshold.
Absolutely, yes. It's like a whole, you know, it's like a whole package that you receive.
Yeah.
Smile, good information, good luck, and, you know, all of this support.
Cashi, it's always a pleasure to have you in studio to speak to you. Continued success, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again in the not too distant
absolutely.
Future.
Absolutely. Thank you
okay,
very much.
Okay, that is Cashi Kozia, who's Youth Information Officer with the Donegal Youth Service, and we'll be back with more in a moment. Hi, Greg. I was listening to the lady who was struggling to put her daughter through college in Northern Ireland. My two daughters got funding through Student Finance, who help pay tuition fee support for those looking to seek education in the North and in the United Kingdom. You can pay them back monthly after your college course is finished on the basis that you have found employment after college and that you are financially comfortable to pay them back. It's a great service. gov.uk/student-finance. It's an option and I really appreciate it. And that's what I love about this program in that it was just a text from someone. Significant, but you know what I mean. And others calling in. Offering support and advice, which is brilliant. Thank you. The thing is though, it is an option, but, you know, when you can go to a college in the Republic and get that Susie grant, which you don't have to pay back, it still feels a little bit unfair, doesn't it, that you might have to borrow. And not everyone might be into long-term borrowing either, but it is an option, and I genuinely appreciate you taking the time to get your phone out and type that out for us. And hopefully that lady's still listening, and maybe it will be an option that will work for them. Okay, we were talking earlier on about rare diseases and a conference taking place a little later on. Janice joins us now on the programme. Thanks for taking the call. Janice, good morning to you.
No worries. How are you, Greg?
Good, good. You have an understanding, I think, of what we were talking about. Your daughter was diagnosed with ASH1L. Do you want to tell us what that is before we sort of talk about a more general conversation, Janice?
Yeah, there's not a lot known about it, Greg, to be honest with
yeah.
you. It was only discovered in 2016, so it is still very rare. It's where she had a spontaneous genetic mutation, basically, when she was in the womb.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for it. So we have two genes, obviously, H1L. She has one that's working and one that's faulty, which is causing this. And then that can go on to, like, cause developmental delay. You know, it can cause autism. There's quite an extensive list, hypotonia and stuff like that, joint hypermobility. So, as I say, there's not a lot known about it. Even the doctors don't know much about it. But it was a long, slow process.
Yeah, it must be very difficult, Janice, to deal with something whereby, you know, you can't get the answers that you seek.
It's the not knowing that gets you.
Yeah.
You know, at least if you know something's going to happen down the line, or, you know how is she going to be when she's older, you know, you might feel better about it, but it's the not knowing. But, hey, she's her own wee woman, and she's coming on great, and there's no difference on her to anybody else. So she'll get there on her own time.
Now, it did take a long time to get an actual diagnosis. What was that journey like, Janice?
It was long. So in March 2021, we were in hospital and they were questioning why her development was delayed. Mm. So they actually done some genetic blood tests. This was up in Letter Kenny, and it came back that there was no abnormality detected. So at this stage, then her paediatric doctor referred her to a neurologist in Temple Street. And we had the first appointment there on the 22nd of March. So we were talking 6 or 7 months before we even got that far. Mm-hmm. They done more genetic bloods, where the bloods were taken from both myself, her daddy, and the media, and they were sent off to Germany to be tested. So that took about a further 8 weeks. And then we were called back up to Temple Street on the 24th of November, 2021. And we were told then that she had a diagnosis of the H1L. We were given very little information because, as I say, it's only been discovered in 2016, so the doctors are still very much learning as well.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of given support, and we were told that a genetic counsellor then would contact us in relation, you know, for a wee bit of counselling, basically, you know, and try and help us out and understand it. But that didn't happen until August 2022. So you were talking nearly a year after before we had any kind of counselling or, you know, any further understanding of it. So it was quite slow.
My really slow, really. Because you're waiting all the time for the next appointment or an appointment or a call. And, you know, you try and keep going, obviously, but you're constantly just wondering, is this letter about that? Or, you know, it's torture, really, especially too when you want answers. But unfortunately, because this is so rare, the answers aren't necessarily there, but the support's important.
It is. You know, as the genetic counsellor told us, and as far as she was aware and the doctor's aware, Amelia is the only one in Ireland with this diagnosis.
Mm.
Now, she did link us up to a team that, you know, if anyone else was diagnosed in the future, you know, where the parents and stuff can link up, you know, because it does, like, Amelia has scoliosis too, so there's a scoliosis community out there, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
You learn so much from different parents, but at the moment, we're the only ones in Ireland, so we're just kind of very much be like guinea pigs at the moment.
And what does that, but you know, when, that's what I was going to say, well, guinea pigs is maybe half the answer, Janice, but because it's so rare, Would the medical profession take a particular interest? Like, could that work to her advantage, or are they all busy concentrating on conditions that are more common? Do you know what I mean? Does it work? Like, are they saying, right, well, we want to give her particular attention because this is so unique?
No. There's no other answer to give you. You know, she kind of been temporarily discharged from Temple Street, but they're keeping her on the books just in case we do need anything in the future.
Mm. And Janice, how do you cope with the not knowing? Because you weren't prepared for this. None of us would be prepared for this. You know, there is no rule book or there's no pathway that your daughter might follow. It must be very difficult for you as a family and for your daughter to sort of deal with that sort of uncertainty, or where are we going to go, or what's going to happen next?
It is hard, you know, like she has a page there on Facebook called Amelia's Scoliosis Story. We went down the scoliosis route because it is more common, and more people, you can explain it better because there's more known about it. But in regards to the H1L, how do you cope? You have kids, Greg, you just get on with it, don't you?
You
have no choice in the matter. But as I said, she's getting there in her own time. You know, she's trying to do speech and stuff now. I actually posted up videos last night of her saying bye-bye. And, like, I've always said to the doctors, she'll get there in her own time, you know.
Mum knows best half the time, don't you know? And not half the time, most of the time. Mum knows best. You know, you can see where, in terms of her development, when she's coming and when she'll arrive and stuff. And what could change? Oh, I mean, obviously, the delay in the diagnoses and then the delay in receiving the counselling, which I think was critical. I'd love if you'd have got that the day or the next day of being told this information, but you didn't. What is there anything that needs to change going forward for Amelia and you and the family, Janice? Like, what's, or are you content with the support you're being given right now at the moment?
Well, there is no support. You know, I am on the Rare Ireland page as well there on Facebook, and I'm nearly sure I have commented on things and, you know, sent on questions and stuff. And that is the support that's there. Them guys, like, you know, they're all parents or families of someone with what we call a rare disease. And that's where you get your support from. In the long run, we don't know, Greg. We don't know, you know, is much more going to happen if we just take it as it is. You know, speech, she's meant to be getting speech therapy and OT and physio and stuff like that, but the services just aren't here. I can't even remember the last appointment she had for a physio. You know, we had a fight to get an appointment for Autoblock because she wears AFOs, and it just feels like a constant battle, but you just have no choice but just to do it.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be like that. I mean, that's the way you're having to approach it, because you'd go mad otherwise, but it shouldn't be like that. We shouldn't have to rely on your patience and resilience, or your daughter's, for that matter. And whilst she is very unique, one person with an official ASH1L diagnosis, she is one of over 300,000 people with rare diseases. That's a big community, Janice, that shouldn't be ignored.
It shouldn't be ignored, Greg, but it's, you know, these guys in Rare Ireland, you know, they're constantly fighting as well to try and get services to improve and stuff like that. And it doesn't matter how much people seem to do, you just get nowhere. I'm always told, go on to the HSE, your service, your say, you know, put on a complaint that way, but they have to respond. But does anything change realistically?
Well, that's it. You know? See, they beat you, they grind you down, don't they? They grind you down to the point that is there any point in kicking up a fuss or making noise? Is it going to get you anywhere? And you almost think that's by design rather than accident, because it kills the spirit when you're trying to balance everything else in real life, Janice. You know, all the other problems in life still persist and you have to deal with them as well.
Well, that's it. You know, we still work, we're still mamas, we're still running a household, you know, we're still doing our everyday things. And you do fight, it is a constant battle, and it has been for the last over 2 years. You know, you're constantly making phone calls, doing emails, pushing. You know, I have to advocate for Amelia, because there's nobody else there that's going to do it.
Yeah, but listen, it's across the board.
And believe me, it does wear you down a lot. But have to just pick yourself up and get on with.
Of course, because if you look at it, right, who are the ones fighting for these children? It's the parents that are also caring for them. Who are the groups that are providing the supports and what have you that the HSE should be? It's often parents that band together to provide some respite care or some other type of care that's required. This is all should be the responsibility of the state, not people like you and others who find themselves having to fight and provide services when, in fact, as I say, it should be the state doing so.
It should be the state. You've started on main care now, Greg. My son's 19, and he's actually took on the role as a carer for Amelia, so I can continue working. And he's been trying to claim carer's allowance. We're now in April. He's been refused, even though he is providing full-time care for her when I'm working, doing everything that basically I feel like I should be doing, but I have to work because I have to pay for trips to Dublin and stuff like that to get her up there, and we're still fighting for it. So, as you say, you've hit the nail on the head. It all comes down to the government and the HSE. You know, why are they not providing this and making it a wee bit easier for us in a difficult situation
it's
already?
It's so much of an advantage to the state for that care officially to be provided in-house. You know what I mean? Like your son is doing, and fair play to him. It's a no-brainer to support him in what he's doing, because if he can't, you can't work, and so on and so forth. You know what I mean? The cheapest option for the state is to support your son in the work that he's doing. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of love and care for his sibling, don't get me wrong, but he has to make career decisions based on providing full-time care as well. It makes no sense.
Well, that's it. He's 19 years of age. He has a life to love as well, you know? Yeah. So when he's actually hoping to start a job next week, because it's just getting to the stage that he can't keep, well, he's not going with nothing, you know, obviously, I'm helping him out.
I know,
it's been 6-7 months now and he hasn't had a penny in his pocket. It's not right.
No, he should be supported and okay. I don't know what we can do to try and help progress that with you. If there's anything, we'll get, maybe have a chat with Caroline to see if we can make any representations or whatever, in case it made a difference. I don't know. But listen, thanks so much for joining us. Love to all, and hopefully the system changes so people like you don't have to put up with what you're putting up with. But I appreciate your time this morning. And just tell people again of the Facebook page in case they want to follow your daughter's journey.
It's Amelia's scoliosis story. So there's going to be quite a few updates now in the next couple of months there as well, because there's a lot going on at the minute.
Yeah, that's another battle as well, in and of itself. Okay, listen, thanks, Janice. As I say, best wishes to everyone.
All right, great. Thank you.
Take care of yourself. Thanks so very much indeed. Right, we'll be back with a few comments to wrap things up after these. We're in the last part of the 9 till noon show. You're very welcome back to it. John Breslin on the way, of course, around the Northwest just after the news at 12. A caller says, again, the vegan anti-farming agenda. So burning oil, petrol or diesel and airline fuel, in Sarah's mind, is less damaging than animals grazing natural grown grass, which in itself sequestered carbon to grow, therefore improving the environment. The lunatics really are now running the asylum, he believes. Or they believe, sorry, I don't know what gender the person is. Regards to horse racing, I personally hate it, but I cannot see it banned. All they have to do is reduce the numbers of horses racing and make jumps safer. And that is not true about being cared. Yes, some are well cared for, but are we forgetting about a few years back, an owner of a horse smiling, sitting on top of a horse, taking pictures, and there's loads of other evidence of cruelty. Okay, I get you and I remember that, but is it reflective of the entire industry? I would doubt it, but I understand your views. The Irish state gives millions each year to horse and greyhound racing, which are minority sports, while our national parks and wildlife service get only a fraction of what horses and greyhound racing gets. Where are our priorities? It's billionaires who benefit by these monies, not the mass of people, which I think is pretty accurate. Sarah needs to understand, how would you feed the nation without farmers? The farmers are doing more than most sectors to reduce carbon. The plant-based diet that she talks about is not as healthy as she talks about, and we need red meat in our diet, which we have survived on for years. I mean, we were speaking to a specialist earlier on about bone disease, and they said you have to give children full-fat milk. They need it. There's no other way of replacing it. A caller says, I had no idea about horses dying at the Grand National. 3 dead over the festival. My family won't engage with any horse racing events again. Shame on those blaming the protesters. What about the horses that died earlier that day? Indeed. And it wasn't as bad this year as it has been in the past. Hi, Greg. I'm certainly not into the woke culture either, but horse racing is heartless. 3 beautiful horses lost their lives over the 3 days of the week event. That comes in from Mary. But those horses then at the same time perhaps wouldn't even have existed if it wasn't for horse racing. I don't know. More comments on that and other things to bring you tomorrow morning when we return at 9 o'clock. But for me, Greg Hughes and all of the team, great to be back with you again. And we'll be back with you again tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.